here we go, 11:07. There's the wagon, and it has chains on it, Tom. You might have noticed they put chains on it early. That's the wooden wagon that Tom and I use for news and opinion. You don't normally hear it when we're on it between 9 and 10. Somebody hit, why does the wagon only, like, make noise at 11? Because it comes closer, come around here. We get off and walk in. That's what we ended up having to do. So that's what happens with the wooden wagon. We use that to spread the news and opinion. And there's always somebody holding Al, the teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar. And in this particular case, the guy seems pretty upset about the snow.
Shut it! Be here, snow! Get out of here, snow!
Right.
I don't want to live in a wonderland of snow!
Understand?
In retrospect, it should have been Zach.
Zach was the guy that came and picked you up.
And Rachel, half the show.
How bad do you think Zach feels that he drove all the way out, picked you up, and then 15 minutes later had to go to the exact same neighborhood and pick up Rachel?
I hope bad enough to make Rachel get up earlier and come in with me tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm. Was he vaping in the car?
No, he was not.
This stuff smells so good. Like a Yankee candle factory burning down.
Fruity.
It's fruity. Or vanilla-y.
Yeah.
Or sandalwood-ish. Let's see who released the photos. Jeff Bezos has some photos of himself and his girlfriend, and apparently they're doing different things that you're not supposed to be looking at if you're under the age of 21 or if you didn't pay for it. Who do they think leaked it? The brother?
So what's odd about this is that Jeff Bezos' mistress or girlfriend or lover, or whatever you want, however you want to describe her, her brother is like best friends with Roger Stone, and he's a member of Trump World, and it turns out, it sure looks like, all the reporting is, that he was the one that leaked it. And no, they say that the hunch is he did not hack his sister's phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that means. That may mean that his sister sent him these things and then he passed it on.
Yeah.
But the reason this is still pretty deadly is it doesn't matter who got them, who stole them, if this is the case. The problem is they have egg on their face right now, National Enquirer, because it looks like they tried to extort Bezos to keep these pictures private.
Mm-hmm.
They are very nervous right now because if it can be established that they did this for political reasons,
mm-hmm.
then that whole Mueller arrangement where they were not going to prosecute David Pecker and National Enquirer as long as they, you know, played above board and told them all they know, that could go by the wayside if this is seen as something that was done for political reasons. Now, you might first say, well, clearly it's not done for political reasons. It was just the brother of the lover who released these to us, if that's indeed the case. But the problem is because he has political connections to the Trump campaign, it does look like it might be political. And apparently people in Trump world knew something was coming down from the National Enquirer. So there is a suggestion or suspicion that they might have had something to do with it. But that's why they're so nervous about that. The whole extortion business is another thing that's going to have to be looked at. On the face of it, it feels like extortion to we non-lawyers. I don't mm-hmm. know if there'll be some technical thing that makes it not, but...
There was another high-profile individual that said that the National Enquirer also sort of extorted him for photos. I forget who that was. It was a sort of a side story that ran along with it.
Oh, yeah. No, Ronan Farrow.
Ronan Farrow said that,
Ronan
right.
Ronan Farrow, yes.
Yeah.
And he's working on a book. Apparently, this might be part of that book.
Let's see. The little side piece on that was Dan Savage, our own local sort of sexpert, was in the New York Times saying, there's a good idea. Well, release the photos. Let's all look at them. And then he has another thing that he calls for, that every year people should send out nudies so that eventually at some point we're not all shocked
by
nudies.
We'll just be bored by that. Yeah, and they won't have the kind of potency. I do think that if you fight it and expose it, it might, you know, do you, you know, greater benefit. The problem is that we're not all Jeff Bezos. I love Jeff Bezos' explanation because he was at first somewhat intimidated. He didn't want those photos to get out. But he said, if I, the richest man in the world, can't fight this kind of blackmail, who can? And so he sort of moved in that direction. But yeah, it is right. The potency that we have for these things. Now, if it is doing something illegal or it's something scandalous, if it's just nude shots, that's not as a... scandalous, but if it's of somebody, if you're married and having an affair, all this kind of stuff, that gets
ultimately, who cares? Let's see if the picture.
Oh my God,
this.
John!
No, Tom.
National Enquirer survived for
no. I know they
a century.
I know they do. I'm asking
okay.
you this.
Yeah,
if they became available and they were up on the internet, would you look at them?
Absolutely. I'd have to. How could I be blind to that? I've got to keep up with the news. Now, the question, if I wasn't in the news, I certainly wouldn't look at, you know, I wouldn't seek it out. But my hunch is if suddenly they became public, everybody and his mother's going to have them. You, it'd be hard to avoid. How about you, John?
I'd know. Only out of the sense of like, listen, yeah, we did that. He privately, he took the photos or she took the photos in the phone. Somebody got them. By looking at them, by saying, oh, well, I need to. Yeah. No, you don't need to. By looking at them, you encourage the next person to release the photos as well, and then people are tweeting them and retweeting them. I'd rather be able to say, I respect the guy's privacy, whatever happened within the privacy of this, wherever this took place.
Yeah.
Let him just have it, whatever it is. It doesn't involve my life in any way. And everybody going after Jeff Bezos for the divorce, it's a personal thing. Let him do what he needs to do and let it be that. But the people now, the Wall Street Journal actually kind of dove into it and said, asked questions about the pictures. And it was James Carney, who's the spokesperson for Amazon, said, oh, I didn't realize that the Wall Street Journal is into tabloid media.
Nice.
Yeah, good response on his part because – just move on. It's not important to the general sort of well-being of the nation, the company, and anybody else that's involved with him, other than the personal of his wife, his kids, and now this new girlfriend.
In defense of the Wall Street Journal, though, who was the one who published the details? Jeff Bezos did.
Yeah.
Jeff Bezos took that lawyer's letter and that described each one of the 10 photos. Jeff Bezos was the one who went to print that. So the idea is at this point, I think they don't have the kind of power they would have if they suddenly appeared, because he's admitted to having the affair. He's getting a divorce. All the impact of this scandal has sort of quieted down. So I think if the pictures suddenly show up, they're not going to have the near potency. But you can imagine the potency they would have on him if they said, listen, your wife doesn't realize you're having an affair. You are going to get outed. It's going to ruin your marriage. You're going to lose half your, you know, half your earnings. And if you don't back off, we're going to do this or that. Whatever damage has been done to Bezos, I think has already been done. And the question is now, is National Enquirer going to be on the hook for it or not, legally?
The piece in the Wall Street Journal was saying he has changed as a person. He used to be sort of, you know, the guy sitting around having dinner with the family and the kids and didn't care necessarily about the celebrity. But now you'll see him at big parties, sitting there at birthday parties, sitting next to Matt Damon, and he's seen with this person and that
person. It's like the Russell Wilson knock. People think Russell Wilson's now gone celebrity with his second marriage. That's funny.
Let's see when it also comes to Amazon News. There's tension over the political resistance to Amazon boiling over in New York. And there was some rumor, I think the Washington Post did a thing, that they're growing tired of the pushback from political activists in the city, and they might pull up stakes and leave New York and find some other place.
So the only thing that gives us a hint of a real bite is that there is some kind of like housing board or something, and the Democrats in Albany just appointed somebody to that who could override something that Amazon wanted to do. And so there's a lot of outrage over that. And they were saying, well, listen, they didn't tell us they didn't want this guy on. They knew we were considering him. So they don't know how significant or important that is. Mm-hmm. And the suggestion has been that right now news is being trumped up by primarily, remember, you've got the governor and the mayor of New York both wanting Amazon there. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying, oh, now Amazon might leave because you guys are being such jerks about it. That the people that are being jerks about it say, yeah, they're not really seriously considering leaving. They just think that's a threat that the governor and the mayor are using, in addition to using Amazon to get us to pipe down, and we're going to still object. And
got it.
It is a mess, but it's certainly not the reception that they're getting in Nashville or Northern Virginia.
Let's see. She is known as a centrist, or at least she's not somebody that pushes far right or far left stuff. She's just a common sense individual from Minneapolis, Minnesota, who wants to be your next president.
As your president.
Oh, my God. Who was running sound in there? That's not you, Andrew, is it?
Oh, she's outside, so I think there's a microphones might have been a little strange.
Yeah, okay, well, fine. You know what? Someone should have adjusted
then
before
fix
she
fix it.
As your president, I will look you in the eye. I will tell you what I think. I will focus on getting things done.
And you'll be forced to read my lips because most of your adult hearing will be destroyed by the overmodulated microphone.
That's what I've done my whole life. And no matter what, I'll lead from the heart.
There you go. All right. Fine.
Yeah, she is kind of a different stripe, I think, than most politicians. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if she has much traction. She's seen as the great Midwestern hope of the Democratic Party. And she's very kind of a plain Jane type.
Yes, she is.
Sort of presents herself that way. I thought the best thing about the entire announcement was that she did it I don't know if it was literally a blizzard, but it looked like
it was
that.
Coming down.
Snow was coming down the entire time, and they decided to persevere, and they said that's that kind of Minnesota toughness. That
responding to questions about her treatment of staff, because the story that's sort of hanging on her is that she has high turnover and that she's tough on staff. She snaps at them, and people quit all the time. She said,
I love our staff. Look at this incredible event they put together. And yes, I can be tough. And yes, I can push people. I know that. But in the end, there are so many great stories of our staff that have been with me for years, who have gone on to do incredible things. And I have, I'd say, high expectations for myself. I have high expectations for the people that work for me. But I have high expectations for this country. And that's what we need.
All righty.
So this might actually, I thought, boy, they're really straining. If that's the worst you can say about her is that she's hard on her staff, she might be in a pretty, have solid footing.
Let's see. The one sort of knock against her, she plays small ball. She's the two bills that she's worked on and pushed through, a pretty small one having to grab tomatoes, and I forget what the other one was. She says, no, I'm just common sense stuff. I get things done, small stuff, but it still matters in the end.
Yes.
Okay.
Granddaughter of an iron ore miner, daughter of a teacher and a newspaper man. She sort of
Did she sign
like
on to the Green Deal yet?
No. No? In fact, I think she might be opposed to it.
Oh.
But, I mean, yeah, she's more of a centrist. Now, from a Republican, she'd be as far left as you can get. But as a Democrat, she's seen as somewhat more centrist.
Finland has, after a year or 2 years, decided it is an experiment. It wanted to find out if it gave randomly, I forget how many people signed up for the
2,000.
Thing.
They had to be unemployed.
Yeah. They wanted to find out if you got free money every single month, were you less likely to get a job? Would you go into the workforce? Or would you sort of sit back and not do anything? So the study comes out because Chicago's actually looking at the exact same thing. They gave $1,000 to 2,100 people would get $1,000 a month in Chicago. And they would then get the money. They don't have to do anything. There's no strings attached, no nothing. Just going to give you cash. So here's what the BBC responds when it comes to the universal basic income.
I took this job offer. It's telemarketing. I actually enjoy my job a lot. I love my coworkers. I love the office.
So she participated in the study.
I love the hours. And I just love to be... being independent, earning my own money, and standing on my own 2 feet.
Kertoa, sopiiko sellainen?
Basic income has changed my life. Without it, I couldn't have taken a job with a little lower salary. At first, I was quite skeptical about basic income, but then I realized it is actually a genius idea. I think I have turned my life around.
So because she got the money every single month, she was then able to go out and get a job?
She got a job that she couldn't have afforded to live on, the salary she made without it.
I got it.
So from that point of view, now that's just one person's account.
Yeah.
The general, do we have more?
This one guy, he's a former journalist, so he says the basic income didn't help him out a whole lot.
I'm still without a job. I can't say that the basic income has changed a lot in my life. Okay, psychologically, yes, but financially, not so much. I have still over 1 year to go, so anything can happen. So I'm quite optimistic. Let's see, during summertime next year, I'll have a job.
There you go. Okay. They said that people were happier but not employed.
That's right. The summary was that there were people that got this. It wasn't like a disincentive to look for a job. But in terms of their control group, they said about the same number of people got a job in this group as did in the control group without the basic income. So they said, right now, it's still early. There's another year to look at it. But ultimately, it feels like it really didn't have that much effect. I mean, the people that got it felt a little better, and some could afford to take a job that paid a little less.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's certainly not the slam dunk proving one way or the other. Like, this is the stupidest idea or the greatest idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of it's an indecisive response
at
this point.
What is the ultimate goal? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, in this case, they were trying to increase employment. What the theory was that if you are really struggling to get by, you don't have time to search for a good job and do all the things necessary. So what if we, they're not living high off the hog here, but what if we just put those issues aside. You know, like one of the problems about homeless is they don't have a place to shower. They don't have a place to, you know, dress up to look good for a job interview. If we could take care of those kinds of issues, and we're not dealing homelessness here, but the idea is that if we could take care of those kind of issues and you spent your job was to find a job.
Yes.
If we covered your basic, would you have better luck than not?
Or would you also take a job that doesn't pay you enough to really live, but will supplement that income by taking it from the taxpayers and giving it to you, rather than you improving or making yourself more marketable or taking classes or studying online or offering to do some sort of sacrifice in order to become more marketable or at least to be able to move up in salary, we'll have society sweep in underneath and sort of give you this cushion so you yourself don't have to apply yourself harder.
I'm beginning to pick up a negativity there,
John. Yeah, you should sense just a little negativity.
Right. The idea here, though, is it would relieve people of that so they could find better jobs rather than always. They said that the gig economy is concerning in Finland because you're ending up weaving three different jobs together and you don't make enough. So if you didn't have to worry about the basic income and you could just focus on, okay, yeah, I really want to be a interior decorator. I don't know what, some kind of serious job, you might have the time to do it. The jury's still out on that, but it doesn't look promising.
If you watch the Grammy Awards and some of the music was the old stuff, they had a whole thing to Diana Ross. They did 10 minutes to Dolly Parton. And
Motown. I mean, there was more old. It felt like it was a baby boomer Grammy as much as a millennial Grammys.
So they say music is much louder than it is now than it was then, that there were more sort of peaks, ups and downs. Like, here's 20 seconds of Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. With brutality. Talk to me, sister, so you can see. Can you see sort of the waves of sound, the volume of it?
Yeah.
Right. It's consistent. The sound level is the same, but they're moving up and down so that you sort of feel this, what's going on? And he's back in towards the microphone. So they're engineering it differently, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, do we have samples of? So what's happening is that there is this big range. You know, like if people have a 3-octave range or 4-octave range and they're all amazed. Well, most of us don't use that. Most rock music is right in this, one set of 12 notes, as Sam Elliott says in Star is Born. We all got the same 12 notes, and it all depends on how you put those 12 notes together. Here they're talking about, just in terms of volume, how the mix is. It's a narrower mix, and it all tends to be loud. America, don't catch you slipping now. Hey! Don't catch you slipping
now. Hey! Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Yes, it's consistent. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Didn't he win an award?
Yeah, he did. He won best song and best record, I think.
Okay. Don't catch you slipping now. There you are.
Okay, so that's Childish Gambino. Now, I guess the point there is that the gradations of loudness
just stays the same the whole time, all the way across, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a typical pop song, though. That seems like an odd choice. Yeah. But
Jacob's a...
this is what the two options the New York Times had.
They cut
20 seconds. Yeah.
You question the New York Times, the old gray lady?
I do, when Jacob's involved.
I think it was clear. Marvin Gaye, the volume sort of sweeping in waves, and the other one just across the board straight. But people made such a big deal about that video and that song.
Well, yeah, it was a huge deal because it was a great metaphor, John, of America that you don't buy.
I don't buy it, right?
Yeah, I know, because you're a white, rich, white, Republican, conservatarian.
I'm not a guy, right? But I got to find something I can be victimized by. We'll be right back.
Pop music.
Online Trading Academy text line, thanks for being here. For you, everybody, 98973, 98973, and of course the others. Are the other doors working here in order to get onto the show, the email?
Still down for now.
Still down, all right. Are we going to have to try to fill 9 minutes without email coming up at 11:47?
The texters have come through for us, so we'll be okay.
All right, good. They're coming through on the Online Trading Academy text line.
That's right.
All right. The cowards never left. The weak died along the way, Tom. As far as the snow is concerned.
I see. Okay.
And only the brave made it. During the gold rush, or I think it was the Western Ho, that people would leave the little settlements there in Ohio, and then you're going to go out there and settle the land. The cowards never left. We died along the way. Let's see. Bob Costas, who had been with NBC Sports for as long as anyone could possibly remember.
40 years
That's
almost.
That's 7 facelifts ago. And 5.5 gallons of brown hair dye.
Do you know something?
No.
It's just through observation?
Yeah, just look at the guy.
Knowing yourself?
Knowing myself.
Knowing him.
He's got the thing known as the Botox eyebrow. The eyebrows
is that right?
The end,
yeah. Yeah.
I didn't care about that. Bob Costas, I'm just pointing out.
Yeah, you're just pointing it out. Why? To put him
because
down.
Because I had a bad run-in with him once. And
No. Okay.
No.
Scotch the segment.
No. I'm not going to make it all about
story
me.
Story time with John Curley.
Just briefly. Okay. 1 minute on it.
All right?
So I'm interviewing him, and I said, you know what's funny? I was talking to my dad the other day. I used to watch you all the time. I love you, Bob, on the air. And one time my dad's laying on the couch, and my dad says, look at Costas going on and on and on. He probably doesn't even play sports. He didn't play sports. And Bob Costas goes, screw your old man. And I said, you know what? I think my dad could beat you in a game of horse. He played at Penn. Now, Bob Costas, whether you know or not, has an incredible memory for all sorts
yes,
of sports trivia.
Exactly photographic.
What year did he play at Penn?
Yeah.
I said, 1950 to 1954. Did he start? I said, yeah, he started as a shooting guard. Okay, so your dad is playing for Penn, University of Pennsylvania. And I don't know who they're playing, but apparently from like 50 to 54, horrible team. Terrible team. Couldn't put together anyways. Couldn't even beat Harvard. So he knew all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, holy crap. All I know is I love my dad, right?
Yeah.
So I go back to, you know what? Say what you will about my father playing other. At least he was on the court. He was at least playing. My father said he could beat you in a game of horse. I could kick your old man's ass in a game of horse.
He didn't say that on the air.
Yes, he did.
On the air?
Yes.
Let's check the videotape.
I remember thinking, okay. Bob, let it go. Why are you so upset? Anyway, highly competitive guy. Good for him for being in there. He made a couple of comments back in 2005 saying, listen, I've gotten closer to football. He left in 98. They took him off, or he went away in 93. He comes back in 2000-something, 2005, because his friend asked him to come back and do football again. He comes back in, but he still has a problem with the violence of the game, and he says a lot of things. At one point, he's at a press conference, and he says, look, you can't ignore the fact that this is a violent game, and you can see it show up on an X-ray, and it's causing brain damage. The NFL knows it, right?
In 2015, to bring it a little closer to contemporary times, the movie Concussion came out at Christmas Day, a Will Smith movie, and it's all about the doctor who discovered CTE.
Yes.
One of the main character, the main player in that movie whose body he studies to determine CTE was a guy named Mike Webster who played for Pittsburgh, and he was going to, this was, I don't know if this is a Monday night game or what, but Bob Costas was going to introduce the coverage, and it was set in, it was the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the players. He thought this is a perfect entree into this and talked about how, yeah, we're here for this big game, but, you know, keep in mind, there's also the central point of this game is Mike Webster, and he got in all sorts of trouble.
Right. He talked to ESPN about how he got the call that he'd be pulled off the Super Bowl.
It's possible to say football is an exciting sport, but there are these undeniable problems. The issue that is most substantial, the existential issue, is the nature of football itself.
And so it was that 1 year ago, just weeks before he was to host his 7th and final Super Bowl, Bob Costas was removed from the telecast. It all began to fall apart on November 7th, 2017, at a symposium in Maryland.
The reality is that this game destroys people's brains.
Costas' comments went viral, and NBC, whose current contract with the NFL is worth roughly $9 billion, quickly distanced itself from its star. Bob's opinions are his own, and they do not represent those of the NBC Sports Group.
So I guess that NBC is not sure whether there's a connection between football and brain trauma. And I imagine the next press release is, it's still open to question whether or not the earth is round or flat. Okay, I'm good.
Here's the strange thing. If they didn't call him and pull him off that broadcast, would he have done that game?
Okay, now wait a minute. I think we're talking about two different things.
Bob was going to do the Super Bowl, and they called him, and then they said, hey, you can't do the Super Bowl.
That's right.
So he was going to sit there, and he was going to talk about what was happening on the field, and all the violence and the brain damage. So he would sit there in the booth and do the game, even though he has a problem with it.
No, because of the Super Bowl, he would have introduced it. Like, I think with the Seahawks, I think he introduced it. He was part of the pregame setup. I don't think he was playing the game at that point.
But he's helping to promote a very violent game that causes brain damage.
Absolutely. Okay. But see, that to me, now you think that may be hypocritical.
Yes,
I think
he cashed the check.
And yet, to me, it's the same thing that I feel. I agree with that 100%. I'm going to watch the Super Bowl, and I think it's terrible that they're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, it was nice to have somebody representing sports saying the things that we're all concerned about but acknowledge. But the problem is, until it's outlawed or until something, there still is a game to be covered. But anyway, his job at this point was kind of like the essayist.
He's still promoting the game. Getting a check from NBC that's getting the money from the NFL, causing brain doom.
The people that hate football would accuse him of that, saying yes.
Here's more from Bob.
Soon after, Costa says he was contacted by NBC executive producer Sam Flood and told he was being removed from the Super Bowl.
I think the words were, "You've crossed the line." And my thought was, what line have I crossed?
Costa says he also spoke with NBC Sports Chairman Mark Lazarus.
And I remember reminding them of things going back to the 90s, of what I had done, what credibility I would have to comment about these things. And their reaction to that was, "You're right, but this puts us in a position that's untenable for us. So you can't do the Super Bowl."
So as the story goes, in 93, he was uncomfortable with the direction of the sport and the violence. So he asked to be pulled off. And then in 2005, he got a call from Ebersol, who said, "Listen, be a good soldier, and can you get back in?" So 2005, he comes back.
To football. He stayed
with NBC.
Sports.
Sure, he did
World
all that.
Series and all of that.
Right. Did all the Olympics.
Yes.
Right, Bob Costas with Kitty
but
Kirk.
But football specifically,
but football,
yes.
He comes back in 2005 because he said, "Hey, we need you because we got this new thing called Sunday Night Football."
Right.
"So would you mind doing Sunday Night Football?" Now, the game has not gotten any less violent. In fact, it may be gotten more violent. They try to make some changes and
say,
stuff, but you still have people that are head-to-head, shoulder-to-head, knee-to-head. There's still the problem.
But the argument has been that it's made safer. And in his rip of football, he says, "I toned it down. I basically said, NFL is pouring, you know, millions of dollars into making it a safer sport, and here's what they've done." But anyway, go ahead.
All right, so then from 2005 to 2018, 19, he's still cashing checks from the NFL, but still having a problem with the fact that it's violence and causes
because he's allowed to say whatever he wants to say, and sometimes it's serious, and sometimes it's Brady versus Peyton Manning.
No, he's not allowed to say whatever he wants to say. At that point, you know what, Bob? You've said too much. You're gone.
That's right, but up until then. So he had 40 years where he was always saying controversial things, and the idea is that the MLB, he ripped Major League Baseball because of the steroid problem, and Major League Baseball didn't say anything to him. They let him have his opinions. Because we all know, he's an opinionated guy. He's much more than sports. He had his own talk show for 7 years, but he's bigger than sports.
Right.
But he was an icon in sports, and I think it doesn't help if it looks like NFL and or that NFL pressured NBC or NBC caved NFL. And one of the things NBC told him was, "Listen, we are trying to negotiate Thursday Night Football. We cannot have you ripping them and negotiate." And that is a dilemma.
You don't open a microphone. You don't let him sit in front of a microphone before the Super Bowl and say something that's going to make everybody uncomfortable. You just don't trust the guy.
Well, the thing is, I think you can trust him because he actually submitted his stuff beforehand.
Apparently not.
And they said, "This is beautifully written, Bob, but you can't say it."
Yeah, there you go.
But ultimately, it would have been a nice gesture if you just walked away from the game instead of getting fired.
That's right. You can write to us online, Trading Academy, because the email is down, everybody. But don't panic. 989-73, 989-73. Love to hear from you. We'll be right back. Care Partners Senior Living. Mom and Dad are in that house, and it's become too much for them, and you want to make sure they're in a good place where people are taking care of all of their needs and they're enjoying a fabulous community. It's Care Partners Senior Living. Thanks so much for sponsoring the mail. And the mail, by the way, the mailman's coming by. Here he comes now. Even though most of this is coming via text.
Yeah, rain, sleet, and snow didn't stop him.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
That's right. Danny O'Neill.
I'm not drinking olive oil anymore.
All right, good to know. Teeny Tiny.
Hello!
She's going to tell us about that letter of the day, but first, let's get started now. Tom.
People want to weigh in on your L.A. trip.
Mm-hmm.
Dell in Dallas.
Oh, Dell.
I witnessed John in an auction, and I witnessed John in action at an auction for the Epilepsy Foundation a couple of years ago. Mm. It's one of the most entertaining events I've attended, and he raised a ton of money for a great cause. Those celebrities will someday realize they, too, have experienced greatness.
Oh, I don't know about that. I wanted to know if you got a chance to talk to Dolly and ask her if she remembered the elevator ride in New York City.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I got a chance to stay. I was going to get a picture with her.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't want. And all these people are lining up. It's all backstage stuff. I thought, I don't want to bother her.
Yeah.
And she's just standing there. So I kind of held back. 360 says, John, I sent an email saying, welcome back to the radio fans who love you. The Grammy performance was not as bad as you're telling yourself. How does that person know? I was there. I felt the floor open up.
By the way, did you get Nicole's t-shirt signed?
No.
No, not even that.
No, I bombed out on everything.
360. Sounds like John's Grammy performance sank faster than the Edmund Fitzgerald.
True on that. Sheriff not enforcing 1639, the new gun law. How come nobody is talking about how they're forced to give their medical records to the state? You're losing your HIPAA protection when you buy a gun.
On the more snow business, 360, it was a boring weekend being stuck inside. It's great to have the Tom and Curly Show on today.
And Jeremy and Ballard, our old friend Jeremy, hey, old pal checking in, still surviving the snow storm.
And Trevor G in the 206, it's been snowing for an hour in Federal Way, 3 blocks off water.
Boys and girls in school, 206, my theory is the activity you do when you study less leads to confidence you need to succeed as an adult. Sports, clubs, the smarties end up with just academics, then realize there's a lot of smarties in the big bad world. Confidence often shattered.
And the Gloria in the 707, John, nothing wrong with a yellow legal pad. I wrote down my resume on a yellow legal pad when I arrived in New York City from Argentina. Sent it out, got a job at a Park Avenue firm.
Yeah, the power of the handwritten resume. Good luck. Sometimes it works. 425, from the man's perspective, I say promote the women, let them rule the world. They are great workers, and yes, girls are smarter than boys. We see it all throughout throughout school. So so go ahead, ladies, take the reins. Put words from the wise women. Be careful for what you wish for, though.
And 206, same topic, regarding gender inequality in the workplace. Many women also take time off to have babies. Yeah, we didn't get into that at all. That you can put you behind immediately. And in certain jobs, you take that time off, you're made to feel guilty. Why do you need all that time off? And if you have a difficult pregnancy, you need more time off. Things become even worse for you in regards to rising the corporate ladder.
We thought we found something on radio more annoying than ourselves. ASMR 206 says, it's irritating. That is what it is.
And Sandy in the 425, I love ASMR. It reminds me of being a little kid and hearing my parents talking quietly. I don't like the licking ones, though.
Me neither. 206, oh my God. Like nails on a chalkboard. It's obviously a sex thing. That's all I've heard about. Not a normal thing.
Not normal. Not normal.
Sexy.
On the Finland Universal Basic Income, 253. John is now licking the microphone, everyone. I wonder, are any of us Yule lads going to receive a basic guaranteed income? Sincerely, Doug Bowlicker. Well, that goes way back.
You should start an ASMR channel licking those bowls.
Studio camera viewers, 206, can we have Jacob not pick through his hair and beard while on camera?
Oh.
He looks just messy.
Leave Jacob alone. Hungarian baby rules.
What are you picking through your hair?
I mean, I nervously touch my face, particularly when there's a beard, but I think.
I'm picking. I don't think it's
fair. I don't think I'm picking.
Go ahead. Here's the sound of Jacob picking through his beard.
Hey, check out Quebec in the 60s. All new immigrants had to go to French schools. No choosing. Also, all signs had to be in French, not English, and women had to keep their maiden names when married. All trying to preserve the French culture.
Yes.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
The letter of the day comes from 253, and it's about Cairo's famous Donner Party scenario.
Oh, God.
Tom, on top of the fact that all of the better living through chemicals and artificial ingredients inside Curly, he'd also be tough and stringy. This is who would you rather eat?
Yes.
Okay. he'd also be tough and stringy, just like an old barnyard rooster. And I know I got him. That said, if you were to cook him low and slow, say make a big old pot of Curly and noodles, now that'd be dang good eating. Hey, John, if Tom wants to show you his brand new hatchet, tell him no thanks. Trust me.
Out of time. Bye-bye.